This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, yesterday was Victory Day in the Russian Federation. It's the day when Russia remembers the 25 million people who died in the Second World War at the hands of the Nazis. And it's a very important day in the Russian calendar. And much was expected of Vladimir Putin's speech to the nation. In the end, it turned out to be somewhat subdued, and the war they're waging against Ukraine is also, by all accounts, not going as well as it might have been expected. We're joined now by Tom Clonan, Senator Tom Clonan. Tom is a former soldier, of course, with the Irish Army. He was a whistleblower about the treatment of women in the army and was commended for it. He also has experience of war and death from his time serving in the Lebanon, and he joins us now. Tom, yesterday was a big day and much was expected from Vladimir Putin's speech. For example, he might be going to upgrade what he calls a military operation into an outright war. He was thought to maybe be going to claim a victory of some kind. In the end, it was a subdued speech with a pretty absurd narrative, which was that Russia was engaged in the Ukraine in an act of self-defense from NATO, which was about to invade Russia. This is weird stuff. Now, they've moved from their assault on Mariupol to eastern Ukraine, the Donbass. And they're not doing very well by all accounts there. In fact, the Ukrainians are more than holding their own.
Yeah, so this special operation in Donbass, the renewed assault began like 3 weeks ago. And in that time, the Russians have taken very, very little ground. And this is with their re-equipped, reconfigured battalion tactical groups, reinforced by, you know, experienced professional soldiers from deployments in Tajikistan and on the borders with Georgia and elsewhere. So it has failed to translate into the victory which the Russians would like to have achieved before yesterday's big parade. So I think in the last 48 hours, the Russians have taken a small town called Popasna. And again, like other towns they have captured, the capturing of the town has involved its complete destruction.
Yes.
So they've had very little to show. And unfortunately for Putin, there are still Ukrainian troops in the Azovstal steel plant in Mariupol. So he cannot even claim that they've fully taken Mariupol. And for their offensive, that's a drawback because that's taking up hundreds, if not thousands, of troops to surround and reinforce the troops around the Azovstal steel plant, because if they take their foot off the gas there in any way, you could have a Ukrainian breakout from the Azovstal steel plant, which would be, from in propaganda terms, an absolute disaster for Putin. And I think increasingly this reflects on Putin personally and on his status as the kind of the strong man of Russia and its autocratic leader. So there was a lot of speculation about what would happen yesterday. Obviously, Putin was not in a position to declare a great victory. And there was a suspicion that he might escalate the war hugely, yes. That he might issue an order for a general mobilization of all, you know, Russian reservists and people of military age to really, you know, signal that he intended to totally, completely and utterly destroy Ukraine. That didn't happen either. He appeared at the parade wearing, at one point, he draped a blanket over his knees and he looked, he's a man on a particular timeline at the moment because the war in Ukraine, is unsustainable for Russia in the medium to long term. So the Russian finance ministry this week actually itself admitted that their GDP, their gross domestic product, was going to shrink by 12% this year. Now that's a conservative estimate, but if that happens, that'll be the greatest contraction of the Russian economy since Boris Yeltsin took over in 1994. So that economic hardship that will be inflicted on ordinary Russians is going to erode support for the war. I think there's a saying in Russia that the refrigerator is more powerful than the television.
Yes.
You know, in terms of state propaganda, if you can't put food in the fridge, and then, you know, it doesn't matter what propaganda you're hearing on the TV. So that'll erode support for the war. And of course, from the economic perspective, it'll also hinder Putin and Sergei Shoigu, his defense guy. It's going to really, inhibit their capacity to sustain these extended military operations in Ukraine, which are very, very costly and very, very expensive. So, you know, all of these things. So there's a timeline there of how long they can sustain this. And I think that timeline is intimately linked with Putin's fate himself.
Yes.
You know, what's going to happen to him? And in that time, I suppose the fear would be that he might resort to using some kind of a standoff weapon, you know, because his military are unable to maneuver effectively on the ground, that he might resort to some desperate measure to signal to the West that he will not tolerate their support for the Ukrainian resistance. So we just have to hope that in the window that's closing for Putin, personally for him, and also for his adventure or his misadventure in Ukraine, that he doesn't do something rash.
Are we talking chemical weapons here? Are we talking tactical nuclear weapons or cruise missiles, which I think they have been used in this assault?
Yeah, so all of the above. I mean, I think my fear would be, now I have to stress, I think this is extremely unlikely, but we cannot rule it, and so therefore we must consider it. Like last week, the Irish people were upset and provoked by a video, a kind of a graphic, an yes. infographic that was broadcast on Russian TV of a nuclear drone, a subsea nuclear torpedo drone that was going to generate a tsunami that would destroy Britain and Ireland. And as the Russian spokesperson said, it would reduce Ireland and Britain to a nuclear desert.
Yes.
You know, now, when I saw that infographic, I thought to myself, oh my goodness, what now? What's this? And then, of course, you know, when you actually read into it, you realize that technically it wasn't possible for them. They don't have such a weapon. But it goes to show the kind of thinking in the Kremlin that this is a threat that they're prepared to use. Now, there is a Russian tactical doctrine known as escalate to de-escalate. In other words, you threaten, as a bully does,
yes.
your adversary with the most extreme violence. And, you know, it's something that, you know, you should never make a threat unless you can carry it out. And we know that the Russians can carry it out. We know that when Putin used Novichok or authorized the use of Novichok, the nerve agent in the UK, and also the use of, I think it was polonium, to assassinate Litvinenko in London. We know that he's prepared, willing, and able to use weapons of mass destruction, even in those modest ways. So, you know, he might threaten this, and then, you know, having intimidated your adversary, you sue for terms. So this is, it's called Protozhenie Sledwitzie, which, excuse my Russian pronunciation, which means to be continued, as opposed to being brought to a conclusion. So that would be the hope. But the Russians have the largest nuclear arsenal in the world. They have in excess of 6,000 nuclear warheads. Britain, France, the United States have approximately that amount between them.
Yes.
Of the 6,000 nuclear warheads that Putin has under his control, about 1,500 of them are currently deployed. That means ready for use in air bases throughout the Russian Federation, on submarines in various locations, and in mobile and fixed launch sites within the Russian Federation. Now, interestingly, the Russians have developed over the last number of decades what they call small tactical nuclear weapons. So these aren't the big strategic ones that would take out an entire country. These are smaller tactical nuclear weapons of between 1 kiloton and 100 kilotons in strength. And to put that in context, the atomic bomb at Hiroshima was about 15 kilotons. And that killed approximately 150,000 people in the target area.
Yes.
Immediately.
And was used by the Americans.
So they have a spectrum of these weapons. Some of them would be smaller than the weapon that was used in Hiroshima. And my fear would be that they might be tempted to use such a weapon against Ukrainian fixed positions in the on the outskirts of the Luhansk and Donetsk oblasts, or that they might strike further west, that they might hit Lviv, or, you know, to prevent the onward transit of Western weapons and tanks and radar systems to the Ukrainian resistance. But, you know, again, if they were to deploy such a weapon and use it, it would be an absolute game changer. And I think it would lead to a catastrophic set of anticipated and unanticipated outcomes. I mean, who knows? Like, the radiation contamination would be appalling. You have, with a nuclear detonation, no matter how small, you have a thing called electromagnetic pulse, which is part of the shockwave. And that would destroy, you know, the navigation systems on civilian aircraft that were in Europe's airspace.
Yes.
You know, for in many other jurisdictions, not far from Ukraine. No, it just would have it would bring Europe into a much wider war, and the United States. Now, the hope is that Russia wouldn't do this, and that Putin might be persuaded to either step back from this operation, and he's still calling it a special military operation, or that he might in some way do something that allows Russia to save face. But worryingly, NATO have observed that in Russian strategy and tactics, they have increasingly incorporated the concept of using small tactical nuclear weapons in any confrontation with the West, with NATO and its allies.
Yes.
And so the fear would be that, you know, while it's unthinkable for us, there may actually be some Russian military commanders for whom this is an option. You know, something that you conceivably do. But again, if they were to do this, and I do think it's extremely unlikely, but if they were to do it, it would drag us all into a wider war.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Now, this is Putin's war, isn't it, Tom? As opposed to a war waged on behalf of the Russian people. It's his, would it be fair to say, he owns it. And therefore the consequences for failure, or indeed the rewards for what would be deemed to be success, are his.
Yes, and you know, you can see for Putin, this is acutely embarrassing. He's always prided himself on the fact that he was a KGB intelligence officer based in the former GDR. And really, there are a number of really serious intelligence failings in his decision to invade Ukraine in the way that he did. So the first major intelligence failing on Putin's part was the idea that they could collapse Zelensky's regime, decapitate the regime, either by killing Zelensky and his family, or that they would flee to another jurisdiction and that Ukrainian resistance would evaporate. That didn't happen. And they failed to take the airport on the outskirts of Kiev, and they failed to get their special forces close enough to assassinate Zelensky. Although I believe they got quite close in terms of proximity to where Zelensky was at one point, but that attempt failed. So Putin completely underestimated the capacity and the willingness of the Ukrainians to resist and fight his invasion. So his advance on Kiev was a spectacular failure, and that will go down in the history books as, you know, an extraordinary failure of armor, of motorized rifle regiments, of tank regiments, you know, that are supposed to be swift and fast moving. And we've discussed this before. They failed to advance more than 3 or 4 kilometers a day, which is slower than walking pace.
Yes.
If Ukraine had been invaded by Roman legions wearing sandals, they would have overtaken the Russians, you know, within hours. So it's just an extraordinary failure. The second intelligence failing was after the Trump administration, the coherence and the unity of NATO was seriously damaged. Like, the Trump administration really damaged the political, diplomatic and military capital of the United States on the world stage. It really undermined their moral platform in the world as the kind of the leaders of the Western world and the leaders of NATO. And Trump, on a tour of Europe, said, you know, he said, in relation to Article 5, the Mutual Defense Clause, he said that, well, the United States and NATO might not defend a NATO member in the event of attack, particularly if they weren't spending enough money on weapons and so on. And Trump kept saying, you know, the United States is doing all the heavy lifting. So the Russians and Putin felt that NATO was weakened and that its authority, its cohesion was undermined. However, after this attack, NATO has pulled together in a way that Putin didn't anticipate. It has been extremely unified, and they have been, you know, central to the supply of weapons and weapon systems into Ukraine. Jens Stoltenberg, has been very, I suppose, proactive and hawkish in his leadership and justifying NATO's supply of weapons to Ukraine, saying it's not an attack on Russia, but that Ukraine is entitled to defend itself. And interestingly, you know, Putin said that the war was in reaction to NATO's provocation by it approaching, hypothetically, Russia's border in Ukraine, if Ukraine were to become a NATO member. But because of his intervention, it now looks like Sweden and Finland, two neutral countries, under the Swedish Prime Minister Magdalena Andersson and the young Finnish Prime Minister Sanna Marin, that those two women are now negotiating those two countries' entry into NATO, which will increase NATO's land border with Russia hugely and bring it right up into the Nordic space, which was a kind of an area of weakness previously for NATO. And NATO will be delighted to get Sweden and Finland in because their militaries are very well developed. They have a very good call-up system. So, you know, this has had the opposite of the intended effect that Putin had planned for. He had planned to intimidate, to threaten. If you recall, Eamon, at the beginning of this conflict, you know, the Baltic states were very nervous. Lithuania, Latvia, even the Swedes, they started to send troops to some of their big islands in the Baltic states. In the Baltic, they were genuinely worried that Russia might invade. But we now know, after 75, 76 days of this war, that the Russian military is not the Soviet army. It's not the Red Army.
Yes.
It no longer poses the same threat to Europe and to the West that it did before, save in insofar as, you know, you disregard the threat of a nuclear strike.
Yeah, and their behavior has been barbaric, not just in shelling and destroying civilian areas. They haven't even collected the bodies of their comrades when they fall. They've stolen, they've raped. This has been a shocking spectacle, and we have witnessed it on television. Now, it appears overnight, Tom, that they shelled Odessa, which is a target for them that they may not reach. But if they were to reach it, it's a port, it's an important city, and it would mean Ukraine is landlocked were it to fall to the Russians. But their main focus appears to be the Donbass. Now, there's been fighting there since 2014, and many people have died. But even that doesn't appear to be going to plan. They're not making any ground. There are a lot of separatists, Russian separatists, in that region. But even so, they're not really making progress. They're stalled. And that in itself is embarrassing, isn't it?
Well, it is, because just to deal with your points in reverse order, in relation to Odessa, the Russians haven't shelled it because they're not within range of Odessa. They've been held back by Ukrainian resistance. So they've used, again, this temptation to use standoff weapon systems. So they've used missiles to strike Odessa and Lviv, but they're not within range of their artillery assets. And the Russians in Donbass, so they had about 60% of the Luhansk and Donetsk oblasts since 2014. They occupied those. So they seem to be trying to push out to own, if you like, or occupy 100% of those oblasts, the kind of the political boundaries on the map. But they're really, it's been very, very slow. So their main jump off point, and we spoke about this before, is the town of Izium. And they've been trying to get to Slavyansk, and Kramatorsk would be a big target for them because that's a big hub for the Ukrainian military.
Yes.
And they have been unable to make any meaningful advances. Down in the south, you know, they have surrounded Mariupol, but they can't really fully claim that they have taken it until the last resistance in the Azovstal steel plant has been extinguished. But they have failed to move meaningfully towards Zaporizhia, Melitopol, and, you know, so that's a big story, that they haven't been able to break out and move on those cities to, you know, cut off Odessa for an assault on it. They're never going to take Odessa. It's just not going to happen based on their performance thus far. And in the north, in Kharkiv, not only did they fail to take Kharkiv, but in the last few weeks, Ukrainian troops have begun to gain ground, you know, that was lost. They've been pushing the Russians back towards the Russian border. And a big story in the next couple of weeks would be if Ukrainian troops manage to push the Russians to the Russian border, that's going to be a huge propaganda win for Zelensky.
The impact, Tom, of it's estimated that up to 30 Russian generals have died in this. One of his leading generals has been sacked, but up to 30 have been victims in this. Presumably the Ukrainians have very good intelligence. The Americans also appear to have very good intelligence behind Russian lines, as it were. The significance of that to an army?
It's huge because, back in the day, even when I was in the military college, in the cadet school, there was a case study of the British invasion or retaking of the Falklands. And in the battle for the Falklands, the Argentinians sank a couple of Royal Navy ships and support ships. And so the parachute regiment, they had to go on the ground. They had to get in and the Marines and actually conduct that invasion on foot. And one of the consequences of that was that a lieutenant colonel was killed in what they call a section and attack.
Yeah.
And in military academies all around the world, they say there's no way, a senior officer at the rank of lieutenant colonel should be exposed to the what they call advanced to contact combat element. That somebody like a lieutenant colonel should be well back to the rear at brigade, headquarters, and shouldn't be vulnerable like that. And this was a very, very pointed case study.
Yes.
To lose 30 generals or to lose any generals in combat is extraordinary. And I think that speaks to the inability within the Russian military for, junior officers, the captains, the majors, the lieutenant colonels to take the initiative to act autonomously and to coordinate with their units on their left and right flanks to maneuver effectively. I think there's a very, very hierarchical, top-down command and control concept within the Russian military that has, hampered their capacity to be agile and flexible on the ground, and number two, has exposed their general staff to, casualties in this way.
Two final questions, Tom. There's been talk all along of an off-ramp for Putin. In other words, a way out that offers dignity of some kind and a rationale for stopping. Is there one? And secondly, are we looking here at a long war of attrition that might last much longer than we're thinking at the moment?
So in relation to the war of attrition, I just can't see it happening. The Soviet Union collapsed because really its economy was on a war footing throughout the Cold War.
Yes, and Thatcher and Reagan outspent them.
And it was just unsustainable. And also, people voted with their feet, and with the expansion, with the changes in technology and satellite TV and so on, people were in the Soviet satellite states were aware of what was really happening in the West and were envious of the prosperity and the freedoms that people enjoyed. So it wasn't a military intervention or even a political intervention that brought the Berlin Wall down. It was just people voting with their feet. I think Russian people are going to tire of this war. I think sanctions will have an impact on accelerating that lack of support for the war, but also just it's unsustainable for Russia to maintain this kind of momentum and war of attrition in Ukraine. And we know that because NATO was unable to sustain an occupation of Afghanistan. It eventually came to an end. And similarly in Syria and in Iraq, you know, the Western presence, you can only spend so many trillion dollars or rubles before you have to leave. So that war of attrition, I don't see it happening. In relation to Putin himself, does he have an option? Apparently, he tells a story about an encounter he had with a rat. Apparently, he cornered a rat, and he was amazed at how the rat turned once cornered. And, you know, he says such a small creature displayed such ferocity and took on a grown man, a big Russian man. And I think in the telling of that tale, he, you know, there's a hint as to his own thinking about his own personal fate, that he may be prepared to do something rash in order to save. Now, if you recall, Eamon, towards the end of the Third Reich, Hitler used to rant and rave about wonder weapons, the Wunderwaffens, you know, that would save and turn the tide of the war. I just hope, you know, psychologically, mentally, he's not in that space. But there is no way out for Putin now, because he is a war criminal. I think the fact that he used the Interior Ministry troops to go in after the frontline troops to take out, you know, local mayors and political people and leaders, that can be directly related back to him. So he knows that at some point he may be brought before an international criminal court, which would be the final humiliation for him. Those around him who are losing, you know, the oligarchs that empower him and support him are losing in a real way their yachts, their capacity to travel. They will all be looking at each other and wondering, you know, what's next? Whatever about Putin, what will their fate be in all of this? So the hope is that in that shrinking timeline, that Putin doesn't do something or is not permitted, or that people will not follow an order that would lead to, you know, an horrific outcome.
Okay, Senator Tom Clonan, thank you very much indeed for joining us on The Stand today. That's Tom Clonan. We're grateful to Tom, to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.